Yes, so day four. Congratulations making it till here. One more day to go, and then we will have the about two and a half weeks time to work with your course plan and comment on other participants' course plans. We'll get back to this, to the details in the afternoon session. And then we will meet us again once more on 20th April, the same timetable, like 10 to 12 and 1 to 3 p.m. Central European time. And we'll have a look what you have been doing with your course plans and if there are any issues that we should have a closer look. But now, what we are going to discuss today is accessibility. So this is under the empowering students phase of the digital competencies, and there are some other parts as well, but we are going to have a look at the digital accessibility of learning materials and also some pedagogical frameworks in this topic. So, what I want to tell you is that accessibility benefits all. I will tell you more about it in a minute, and I will also share some practical tips for you. And now, today, we are not having any small group discussions with this, but I would like to have some whole group discussions because I now know that, for example, Fred, you said that you have history in working with disabled school kids, if I remember it correct, and you probably, yes, great, and you may have all kinds of experiences that we, you also shared yesterday. So I'm really looking forward to hear what your thoughts and experiences are. And again, once again, there may be very individual arrangements in your home universities, but it's also good to hear examples and experiences of that. Oh, so you don't have this accessibility button on your keyboard? It's a default setting here in Finland. April's Fool. Oh, okay. So let's have a look at what I'm going to talk to you. So first, we'll go through what is actually accessibility. And why is it important? And then I will give you an overview of a pedagogical framework called Universal Design for Learning, UDL. And then we'll go through some typical accessibility issues in learning materials, or actually any materials, but especially what teachers should pay attention to. And I will share you practical tips to improve accessibility. Please share your experiences, give your comments. You can say anything at any point. So please raise your hand or just open your microphone, because this is something that you probably have a lot of hands-on experience already, and maybe you don't have the solutions, but if you share the problems, then we might be able to discuss and maybe solve them together. So, why is accessibility relevant and timely? And as I already told you, that this is a topic that is very close to me because I'm writing my PhD on improving accessibility in higher education institutions' online learning. And this is a highly relevant topic. And as we are in the European Union, we have a regulation on this as well. So, digital services and learning environments, oh, I will go a bit backward actually. So digital services and learning environments, they are rapidly becoming more and more widespread and varied. And Many educational institutions share the same key digital learning environments, like, for example, Moodle is in all for them Alliance universities. And it is well known that digital learning environments, they, of course, they do create new flexible learning opportunities, but they also raise new kind of barriers to learning and participation unless they are designed to be accessible in the first place. And based on research and student feedback and a lot of experiences of teachers, digital services are not currently accessible to all students. And accessibility of digital environments is not only ethically important or desirable, but also a statutory duty nowadays. So at the end of 2016, the European Parliament adopted the directive on the accessibility of the websites and mobile applications of public sector bodies, such as higher education institutions and libraries, which the member states had to bring into force by national legislation. And for example, here in Finland, the Act on the Provision of Digital Services entered into force exactly 2 years ago, 1st of April 2019. And for us as higher education institutes, that meant much stricter accessibility standards than previously. And so when new electronic environments and services are developed and deployed, it is crucial to incorporate accessibility right from the start, because it's something that you cannot just glue on top of it afterwards. Sometimes we tend to think that that's possible, but no, it has to be considered right from the first stages of designing such environments, for example. And also staff need some support and advices on this. And it doesn't have to be anything like big or very technically demanding. Even a relatively small technical or pedagogical solution can greatly improve the accessibility of learning environments and learning materials as well. And this kind of tips I'm going to share you today. So just a glimpse of what we are talking about today, because we are now talking about accessibility and I'm concentrating on digital accessibility because we are now in the digital competencies course. So accessibility can mean, or it has the definition also as the accessibility of the physical world, like are there stairs or is there an elevator or ramp and so on. But now we will concentrate on the digital aspect. And this is what the European Union directive is asking us to do. The websites and mobile applications and their content should be built in such a way that anyone can use them and comprehend what is said. This is important as well, because this also demands us to use like clear language to say things in a way that they can be understood. And the content needs to be accessible with different kinds of devices and assistive technologies, which we'll also discuss a bit later today. So these demands, they concern platforms, content, the language, like the clarity of the language or how comprehensive it is that we are using, and also like assistive technologies as well. And if we compare the accessibility of the physical world, which is probably kind of easier to or more familiar to us, to the accessibility of the digital world. So there is a big difference between access and accessibility. This is something that this quite often comes up with teachers when they come and contact the digital pedagogical support and say, "And well, I have uploaded my materials online. Now they are there, the students have access to them, so I guess they're accessible now, right? And then we say that, well, that's not enough yet. If we look at this picture, it's a front door of a house. The doors are open, kind of saying welcome, but right off behind the door, there are very steep stairs there. So, for example, if you are an elderly person or you have any problems with your legs or are using a wheelchair, for example, or if you are a small child, the house is really not accessible. Yes, the doors are open, but you can't really access the house. There should be a ramp or an elevator or a lift or something like this. So this you can compare with your learning materials. If you put them online, yes, you provide the access, but if they are not accessible, for example, if you have a visually impaired student who is using Screen Reader, which is a program that reads the content aloud, like the text content aloud to the student who cannot see. And if you have a lot of images and charts there, but you haven't added the alternative text to for the screen reader to describe the student what is there in the image, then they have no idea what the information content there is. So this is the difference between access and accessibility. And when we think about accessibility, I want to point out that accessibility benefits everyone. So it is not just the minorities with some disabilities or other special educational needs. No, but the more accessible your learning materials are, usually there is much better usability and user experience and learning experience. So it usually improves the quality of learning materials as well when you kind of rethink and redesign them to be accessible. And also, I would like to point out that now, especially with all these growing numbers of continuous learning, lifelong learning, we have more and more people, more experienced students and elderly students as well. So there are all kinds of challenges that we may not be aware of. They may not see very well, and for example, or hear very well. And for example, the numbers of mobile users, that's growing all the time. So students have their mobile phones or tablets, and when they're on the go or somewhere, when they have a minute, then they take their mobile phone and check the videos. They may not have their headphones with them, for example, or the background noise is too loud. So if you have captioned the video, then they can check the video and read the captions, and they will be fine even if they cannot put the sound on. Or all these mobile users, when they are, we all know that when it's bright sunshine outside and you're trying to check something on your mobile phone, if there is no sufficient contrast between the text and the background color, it may be very difficult to see what is said there. So the more accessible materials we make, the more usable and more with higher quality they are. So this is a big difference, because sometimes teachers, their first reaction is like, well, I know my students, they hear and see well and they don't need any special arrangements. But my message is that this is no special arrangement. This is kind of the quality that we want to have in these learning materials. So it's nothing special that you have to think that when you, but when you kind of make it a routine to make them as accessible as possible, then it makes your life easier as well. Because then if someone contacts you asking for or telling that he or she is having some issues, then you don't have to make anything special. Your material should be accessible already. And don't worry, I know the everyday life of busy teachers, so don't feel guilty if you don't have the knowledge or the skills or you think you don't have the time. It's not necessarily time consuming. I always encourage teachers to take step by step on these issues. And this is something I want you to think that there is visible and invisible diversity. So very often when teachers come and say, well, I know my students, they don't have any problems, I usually challenge them by asking that, are you sure you know your students? Because you can't see everything. And in very many cases, if the students don't share this information with the teachers, then they just have no idea. And depending on, for example, national legislation, there may not be a register of these special needs. Like, for example, in Finland, you are not allowed to have a register in a higher education institution saying that this student has problems with this and needs this special arrangement. It's only if they inform us about it. So it is students' responsibility to inform the university, and then we can make special arrangements. And for example, here in Jyväskylä, there's a special arrangement that they all get a paper then saying that what they need if they have any special needs, like for example, a longer period for borrowing books in the library, or a longer time to take exams, for example. These are typical examples.
We have the same in Poland, and last 2 years we had a student that had an Asperger syndrome, I guess, and his mom and he himself, they didn't want to inform us, and we all knew there is a problem, but we for 2 years we didn't know what kind of problem is it, and we had problems to deal with the student. And after 2 years, his mother actually thought, okay, I will tell them, so maybe it will help him and them. So as you said, they don't have that, they are not obliged to do this, but not saying anything will cause, in my opinion, more problems that actually informing the university and the teachers and so on, and even his colleagues, right, students, other students, they also were frustrated because they knew that there's something, I don't want to use the word wrong, but okay, there's something not right with him, but they didn't know what, and they were frustrated that he's doing things during classes that they didn't understand. So yeah, that's all.
Thank you, Daniel. I think that was a very important point, that because it seems to be that students, they are very understandable and supportive when they know that there's something special and the peer student needs additional support. But if they think like someone is doing something on purpose or kind of just misbehaving or something like this, then it's totally different. Yes, I think that's a very typical situation, and you can only wish that this student had informed the university right in the beginning of the studies to make everyone's life easier and to be able to support him in his studies better as well. And Fernando, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Well, the problem is about data protection as well with these cases. I mean, this is a sensitive data, so it's complicated to balance the rights and the needs we have in order to teach. In our university, at the University of Valencia, there is a special administrative institution to which they can address and they can give all the information, and then with this reservation and confidentiality, they told us, the teachers, that there is a person, and they told us who is him or her, with special needs, but they don't tell us what is the problem with that person. So confidentiality in this case is preserved, and we know. The problem is that the solutions they give are not proper solutions. They tell us, okay, if you do some assessments, then this person needs extra time. And this is too little, because in the case of a person with Asperger syndrome, of course, we should need more information in order to deal with this question.
That is absolutely true. And also, if I jump now to a bit to another slide, I will come back to this later. But this is also true that the majority of the students, they choose not to disclose their disability and request accommodations for very various reasons. And for the things that Fernando also brought up, they have various reasons, but for studies, according to studies, these are among one of the most general ones. So to begin with, the lack of understanding on how to access the services available, maybe they don't even know, or they don't kind of think that they could help them. And they may feel unprepared or intimidated to interact with the faculty on a personal level. And as Fernando just said, this is very sensitive information. And this really, as we were talking about the guidance and counseling yesterday, that it's based on the trust. So this is something that you really need to have trust on the kind of system and the authorities and the staff if you are about to reveal something so sensitive, because there is the fear of stigma, the fear of being considered incapable by their peer students and by the staff, if they always kind of bring up, Joseph is this special case, or somehow state it negatively. This is very, very sensitive. And it's also, according to the studies, very many higher education students, they also desire for a new beginning without being labeled to something like the Asperger guy or the deaf girl on the second year or so. So this is something, this is very, very sensitive. And also actually, according to studies, there are many, for example, with dyslexia, there are some disabilities that only come up when you go enter the higher education studies, and suddenly you should be able to read a lot more, write a lot more and much faster. So there are many students who actually get the diagnosis after entering the higher education study. So they kind of even are not aware of these issues before. But this is a very sensitive balance between the data protection and us being able to kind of support these students. And it is called a kind of double workload for the students with special education needs and disabilities, because they have to be able to handle their studies as everyone else, of course, and also they have to be able to manage their special needs if they need more time to read, or if they have problems with their motorics, for example, that they cannot really write very fast or something like this. So it is really demanding. Yes, and let's get back a bit further. So as I was saying of this is like an iceberg. We may see something, we can, like this Asperger case is probably a very good example. We see some acts and behavior, but if we don't know the reason behind them, we may really misinterpret them. And then there are so many other things like cultural issues or learning styles or values or religion or other preferences that are under the sea level and we are not able to see or know in case the students do not share the information with us. And then also, I think this is also to remember that there is no such thing as an average learner. We sometimes tend to think that students are kind of the same quality and type, and yet now, and especially with this improving numbers of continuous learning, there are very many different background factors that affect their learning. And now, as we have been discussing, due to this pandemic, when they have the 2 years old kids or siblings running around the house when they should concentrate on studies, there are other issues as well, like in environmental factors as well that are happen in time and place. But yes, go ahead, Beatrice.
No, I just want I just want to include that I mentioned that if they are want to feel free to say the information, the teachers we should have the skills to. I mean, to handle this situation means that the other students, but also the rest of the teachers, we should have some skills to handle this. And I don't know the rest of the faculties, but the students, I mean, if you want that your students with these disabilities feel free to do this, they have to feel comfortable and free to do it. And if they don't feel free, they are not going to say this information and they are not going to say it. So, and the teacher that is going to receive the information need the skill to handle the situation, because you are saying, I mean, we have here a colleague that he was happy to know this, but I know colleagues that has received this information and they didn't know what to do with this information. So, I mean, the information is good, but you know, when you receive the information, now the question is how I'm going to handle this information. And it's very dangerous information because I'm very exposed. They are very exposed to the rest on the, if it can be a dangerous situation. So, I can understand people that don't say it. I don't want anyone to say it. And I know that it's good to know, but if they don't say it, maybe I understand why they don't say it. So, because we need training of our students and training of our personal educators. So, you know, it's just my opinion, because I was like free of a talk. They have to say, okay, maybe because I have suffered this in a little bit and I didn't say, well, okay, I'm saying now, but I didn't say anyone to in my faculty. I didn't want to anyone to know. So, because I don't feel free that anyone to be like with my mark. And
yes,
I didn't want to
know. Yes, exactly.
So, because to handle that, I mean, free talk and to manage and so training. I mean, if you have that, you need skills to handle this situation. It's just my opinion.
Yes, I strongly agree that there has to be this support system for both the students and the staff. And for example, in our university, when students, they only need to contact this one person, like this accessibility coordinator, and then they go through the student's personal situation, and then they make this paper saying that what individual arrangement this person is has been has the permission, like for example for a longer time to borrow books in the library or recording the lectures or something like this, and it doesn't have the diagnosis there. So then they just can go to the teacher and say, hey, I have this permission to get the materials, the slides before the lectures, and can you please provide them to me? And then they don't have to reveal anything more than they wish to the teacher. So there's no diagnosis. It doesn't say why, but it just says that this person has a permission to get the materials beforehand, and then the teacher should respect that. Because yes, I agree, this is highly sensitive in very many senses, and there's always kind of the threat of the stigma, or at least students may think so, even if the environment doesn't think that this is something like stigmatizing. But this is really, really sensitive, and I agree, because a regular teacher who has specialized in his own discipline may have no idea how to support a person with Asperger, for example, or what does it even mean if someone has this, and how could you support? So I think that's why there should be a certain support structure that can handle these, and then just give information for the teachers that in this case do this, because they you can't leave it to individual teachers. I strongly agree because they can't be specialists in special education or psychology.